Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest YouTube edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly. A couple weeks ago, had a riveting conversation with the one and only Anton Daniels. Really, really love talking to him. He's on the right. Well, my next guest is going to be somebody that one could easily argue leans left, okay? Because whether it's scientific data or just straight up political research, the brother knows what he's talking about, and he brings a lot of really, really good and important viewpoints to social media where he's resonating and his cachet is growing each and every single day. In case you didn't know, I like to give the brothers and sisters some shine, no matter who they are, because it's important in uplifting our communities, no matter who we are, where we're going, or what we're aiming to achieve. And that's why I had to have my next guest on the show right now. He's an NAACP Image Award-nominated data scientist and political researcher known for his viral social media posts under the name of Dos Discourse. Please welcome to the show the one and only Joshua Dos. What's going on, my brother? How you doing?
I'm good, OG. It's good to be with you. Yeah. Good to be talking to you.
You know, with the work that you've been doing with Dos Discourse and what have you, I wanted people to know more about you and to hear about some of the things that you're doing. For people hearing your name for the first time, how did Dos Discourse come about?
Yeah, I mean, I work in politics as a political consultant. I pretty much I'm doing qualitative and quantitative research on any political issue you can think about. And then I just started posting about it online. I think it was 2021. Mm-hmm. I started posting. Actually, I started off online just kind of making jokes and talking sports and stuff. And then when the election got closer, I started talking more about politics. And then I think that's when my page, I had 100,000 followers before I ever talked about politics.
Wow.
But then when I started talking politics, that's when it really took off. Yeah.
What do you think the reason for that was? Because there's a lot of people that throw out a lot of information, intel, stats, etc. What do you think made it special about you that you were able to build the following that you've built?
Yeah, I think I lead with data. And I think that we live in a world, you know, the algorithms kind of dominate the conversations in a lot of viral videos, viral takes, viral tweets. Sometimes they're just viral because they're salacious or they're popular or they're just the popular opinion. But I think when you come in with numbers, when you come in with statistics and facts, I think it makes people on both sides of the aisle kind of take a second and say, you know, can I argue with what the data are saying? And that's something I try to do. And I think that's what maybe what added to some of my comments.
You've said staying informed. You've classified that as a form of resistance. Explain that.
Yeah. I think there's a concerted effort to make sure that Black people in particular don't know their history and don't know how the intricacies of that of those histories play a factor in what's going on in the world today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I did a study where we found out for a client that when a person is like three or four times less likely to know basic things about the civil rights movement, they were significantly more likely to support, you know, candidates like Donald Trump. Mm. Right. And so, you know, whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, Trump has said things before, like, I like the uneducated, you know, like he likes some folk that don't think too deep about some things. And I think keeping that information at the forefront of our head can be a way that we push back against any misinformation, whether it comes from the left or the right, anywhere, you know?
Where do you believe you come from? Are you a leftist? Are you a Democrat, liberal? Are you a right winger? Or a centrist, an independent? What would you classify yourself as?
Oh, gee, I'm Black. I'm Black. Everything you see me say, if I support a policy, I think it's because I think it's going to help Black people. If I don't like it, it's because I think it's going to hurt Black people. I have a very, very strong grasp on how these parties have materialized throughout history. And I don't have an allegiance to a party. I don't have allegiance to a political ideology. This is something I like about you, is I think that you definitely want to lead with your analysis first before the party that you have might any allegiance to. And that's something I appreciate that you do. I think there's some areas I want to push back on the things sure. you're saying, but I appreciate that you're doing that. And for me, that's where my allegiance lies. Whichever party is going to help the Black community is going to be the party that I'm going to support. And the Republican Party and those white conservatives on the right have done, I don't even think they've been trying in the last couple of years. And that's why people might hear me slam them a little bit more.
See, for me personally, I love the fact that you said that. And I love the fact that you said you want to push back on me, because my whole point is I want to be educated. I don't pretend to know. If I see what it is, I'll let you know. Like, I do a daily show when it comes to sports, right? Whether it's First Take or it's my show on Sirius XM. But I also do a weekly political show, but I do something like 3 times a week on my YouTube channel. What I try to do is tell people what I feel in the moment based on the evidence that's presented to me. I am fine with being corrected. It doesn't bother me at all. The fact that I have somebody like you who literally specializes in data and information and bringing it to the forefront, I have no problem literally being corrected to the point where if Joshua Dawson set up this, Stephen A., you might have missed this, I'm going like this. Thank you. I appreciate it. But you and I both know most of us in our community are not like that. Unfortunately, if folks disagree with you from the tap, it's a problem. How do you deal with that, doing what you do?
Yeah. I'll say, as that pertains to you, I think it is because your platform is not just so big and not just so powerful. It is full of pretty politics, news-avoidant people who are a goldmine for the political left and political right now. And you have their attention. And so I think that you get a little extra criticism if and when you miss, because people feel like you can't afford to miss with your platform, right? And I think that's a whole different conversation that we can have.
Sure.
For me, I think that is a part of that's a part of the job, right? If my facts are good and if my analysis is sound and it goes against the grain, the next part of my job is to use my communication skills to make somebody understand why the thing that I'm saying is not just right, but it is protective for our community, right? And I see, if I can't do that, then I'm not doing my job, in my opinion. It is not a failing on my people, it is a failing on me. That's the perspective that I carry with them.
That's a perspective, and it's a healthy one. I applaud you for it. But my flip side to that would be, you have some folks that you can put the facts right in front of their face. And because they're emotionally invested, they're not hearing what the hell you're saying, even though you've presented the facts to them. Do you still blame yourself under those circumstances? Do you dismiss them? Do you sit up there and say you need to do a better job of communicating with them? Or do you just leave them be?
So, you know, I think I have two minds. As a political practitioner, unfortunately, there are some times, if your objective is just to win an election, there are some times that the approach will have to be, you have to leave some of them be. Right. If you're just I'm a consultant at the end of the day. Right. So if a client or a candidate of mine that I think will be good for that community wants to win this district and 0.5% is not coming along on this thing and we don't need them electorally, we might have to leave them be. When I see myself as a communicator, I will always see it as my responsibility to bring them along, even if they're being so emotional that they can't engage with those facts, because I have been blessed to be put in this position to speak to them, right? And so, listen, everybody maybe can't do it. Some people are gonna run up against that wall and they gotta stop, right? But if I wanna be the political communicator that I think I have, if I wanna have the prominence, you said I got nominated for NAACP Image Award, I wanna hold that award, I wanna be on television talking to Stephen A. Smith, then I gotta find some creative ways to reach these people even when they don't wanna be reached.
Joshua Doss right here with Stephen A., Straight Shooter in the house. Let me ask you this question, because you talked about the Republicans and how they're not even trying. How would you classify the Democrats? I view it as this. The Republicans, based on your history, I know who who you are. Now, you have some Republicans that look at 1964 Civil Rights Act, 1965 Voting Rights Act. They look at Fair Housing Act, all of this other stuff. And they'll sit up there and they'll say, or you have some folks on the left that'll sit up there and say, hey, this is what we've done. And as a result, we've had your vote for the longest time. The Republicans are saying, hey, we were, you know, there were black folks. You were Republicans before you were Democrats in the age of the Dixiecrats and even before then. And we brought legislation to the desk that was ultimately pushed forward. You know, I said that the liberals have taken credit for, and we're looked at as a racist party. We don't think that's fair, et cetera, et cetera. You see how diametrically opposed both sides are. My thing that I pay attention to is that I remember Lyndon B. Johnson saying, you know what? We passed this legislation and we'll have Negroes voting for us for the next 200 years. And as a result, I think that over the course of time, although the rhetoric has been there in favor of paying attention to our community more so than the folks on the right, I'm looking at the actions, the ineffectiveness, et cetera, and I'm feeling like we've been taken for granted, even when we're talking about illegal immigration and stuff like that. I'm thinking that you got a lot of liberals that want migrants and illegal immigrants in the country because you want to dilute the potency of the black vote. Well, if you disagree with it, you disagree with it. But even for folks that might agree with it, they'll find it appalling that I'm willing to say that. And my point in saying it is not that I want you to lose if you're the left. I want you to do better so you don't lose. But people don't take it that way. To all of that, you say what?
You said that you feel like black folks are being taken for granted. I want to tell you what the data say. 57% of black women also feel like their vote is being taken for granted by the Democratic Party, right? So the what you're pointing at is not a feeling that is just individual. It exists. And I also respect, you know, anybody who is willing to stand up to any political party that we're voting for and say, hey, listen, you're not doing enough. Our communities are still suffering at a large scale. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Chicago, and none but Democrats here, right? And I've seen some of the ramifications of the political system failing young black men like myself. Mm-hmm. I think it's politically inexpedient. I think it's politically not strategic of us for us to then go across the aisle where it is significantly worse and try to make friends of the same white conservatives that created many of the problems that we see ourselves in right now. You talked about the Democrats and the Dixiecrats. What was a constant was white conservatives. White conservatives used to be Democrats. White conservatives now are Republicans. And everywhere, historically, they have been, has not been a safe place for us to be, right? So I don't think it's politically strategic for us. I think what is politically strategic for us, and this is what Frederick Douglass did with Abraham Lincoln, is for us to find folks on the left that we can elect, that we can control, and that we can dominate. Frederick Douglass liked Abraham Lincoln because he could convince him of things, and he did so, right? I want us to up our political chops and own the Democratic Party in ways that you can own when you are a large part of their base.
But how, right? But how is that possible if more of the focus appears to be, whether it's woke culture, cancel culture, the LGBTQ plus community, then it is a focus on us and our needs being addressed.
You don't got no pushback from there with me on that. I think the Democratic Party has not been focused on the very economic, very forefront needs of the black community, and for that matter, for the entire working class, right? And I think that that is part of the reason why we saw somebody like Donald Trump rise to prominence. It's also part of the reason why we saw people like Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang be really popular. And it is not because I think that we should abandon these really real issues of, you know, the LGBTQ community, trans folks, and all that stuff. I think they're all very important. Right. But I think when you look at the hierarchy of needs, black people have been at the bottom of them for a very long time, and also the white working class has been. So I don't have any pushback there. I think that the Democratic Party should recommit itself to an economic populism that will then also probably reward them politically as well.
In this age of fake news, how can people become better at distinguishing what is real from what is misinformation, in your estimation?
Stephen A., you might be the first stop. When you say something, people believe it. People listen. You got my little brother's ear in a way that I don't got. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So the first step is us having people who are in positions of communicative authority being on their P's and Q's. I appreciate it, not to bring up any of your old transgressions, sure. but like, sure. you know, I appreciated how you handled the Jasmine Crockett situation in your apology afterwards, right? But I think that was a moment where if we're talking about like, how do we stop people from, you know, getting off track? It's when people like Stephen A. say it, some people think it's ministry, you know? And so I think that is probably the first step is making sure we have strong communicators that are getting really clean data often. I think the second thing is just the second search. Sometimes you see the headline, people say, oh, did you know X, Y, and Z? Take the second search. Get out of your algorithms, get off of your little ChatGPT, go on Google and see if something is like, you know, I saw a headline the other day that said Trump has cut a bunch of HBCU funding and it had this big number. And I was like, that's interesting. Knowing my following, they would love to hear something like that as it pertains to slam dunking on Donald Trump, right? I just Googled it. I was like, before I share this, let me just Google it. It's not substantiated just yet, right? And then me with my 2 million followers, I didn't share it, right? And so I just think things like that, taking the second search and making sure that we have strong messengers with clean data is a big, big first and second step.
Well, what about the thing you brought up, the Jasmine Crockett thing? And we don't have to run from that because the bottom line is that I thought that it was appropriate for me to apologize, but not for the reasons people surmised. You know, my thing is when I originally addressed her, I'm saying is calling the president a piece of shit on national television going to help you when it comes to 766,000 constituents that you represent. And there's a Senate seat. To represent 31 million people in Texas at stake. So I was speaking strategy, right? When ultimately it went off the rails and then we turn around and we got a situation where the president sticks his nose into the equation, figuratively speaking, and starts disrespecting her and her intelligence. I said, oh, hell no, I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want anybody thinking that I would be okay with him talking about the sister like that. So that's where I was coming from with it. But it still harkened me back to, okay, is that strategy going to work? Because against Tellerico in Texas and what have you, he's coming from a different perspective. And it's Texas. It ain't LA. It ain't California. It ain't New York. It's Texas. And sure enough, she ended up losing. So how do you gauge and judge not just what you say, Joshua, but how you say it? Because I know you want people to hear you. You don't want them to just listen to you. You want them to hear you. How do you do that?
Yeah. So I think first and foremost, extraordinary claims kind of require extraordinary evidence. And with great power comes great responsibility. I think you are Stephen A. Smith. You could have gotten that message to Jasmine Crockett, right? Like, I don't know.
Josh,
I don't know if that was an outside conversation. I'm going to be real with you. Like, I think that was an inside conversation. You know what I'm saying? And this is where I think that some people are, you know, where they're confused. And I'll be honest, I have felt this way about you at times too, is that I love that you're joining the political discourse, but sometimes I struggle understanding not just where your politics are, but who do your politics include and who do they seek to protect and uplift? And I think in the service of political strategy, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that when we have rising stars that look mm-hmm. like us, mm-hmm. that we can consult with, maybe she wasn't responding the way we would like, but that eventually the hope is that we can consult with, that we're not using our platforms to tear them down, mm-hmm. right? And so that is something. And then the last thing I'll add too is like, I hear you talk. Actually, the majority of the things you say are actually pretty left-leaning. There's a little 10% that I think that's right-leaning. And I agree with a lot of the things you say, but what frightens me is what do these white conservatives that I feel like are quite violent towards our community, they also see something in you mm-hmm. that draws them to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes people more apprehensive when they hear you say something that feels like it confirms what the white conservatives might think about.
Would you like me to elaborate on everything that you
just
said?
I would love it. Yeah, yeah.
First things first, we've tried to reach out to Jasmine Crockett on several occasions, long before I ever made any comments about her. She didn't respond. A matter of fact, First Take on ESPN is in the same building on the same exact floor as The View. She was 20 feet away from me, okay? I was across the hall, you understand, in my studio, never came through. Her mother came up to me after the show was over and she was gone and said, thank you for speaking about my daughter the way that you do, because you remind the world she's educated, she's intelligent, she's smart, she's licensed to practice law in Texas, Arkansas, and federally, and that she should have her eyes on the bigger prize. So I'm saying that to say to you, what you addressed, her mother came from a different lens, because her mother was saying, hey, my daughter has this kind of potential. And you were acknowledging it and pointing out how she might want to redirect things. She didn't go any further than that. And I'm not trying to, I'm not divulging, I'm not speaking out of turn. She has to take a picture with me. We only spoke for a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But that was what she said, just to address your point. Secondly, when we talk about my politics, I've religiously stated I've always been a registered independent. You know this better than me. What's the statistics of the amount of independents in this country compared to Democrats and liberals? Okay, because there's a lot of them. It's a lot of them, right?
Somewhere over 40%.
I was told the number was 45, but I know you would know better than me. I read it, but they said it's 45%. So again, one would argue that most people are flowing, you know, in my direction, not with me personally, but in terms of where I stand politically. In other words, you're independent, you're down the middle, but you can lean left or right depending on a specific issue. Now, for me personally, Josh, I'm a cat. I'm fiscally conservative. One reason and one reason only. I can't stand these damn high taxes. They get on my nerves. I mean, the taxes in New York City and LA drive me crazy. In LA and California drive me crazy. I mean, they invent stuff, ways to take your money in California. Do you know that my estate planner years ago said to me, if you're going to be in California, what I need you to do is leave and go to Utah or Vegas for the weekend, because every day that you in California, your cell phone pings and they know you were in the state. And that way it's another day they can tax you and take your money, which by the way is at 13.6%, which by the way, Gavin Newsom was trying to get up to over 16%, which by the way is at 39% federally. You talk about me walking away when you take into account FICA and everything else. You talk about me walking away with less than 40% of my money. I'm sorry, bro. I got a problem with that. That's it. But everything else in terms of liberal leaning, I'm good with it. I'm good with it within reason. So that's where my politics lie. Now, when we say, let's be careful, because we don't want to advocate on behalf. First of all, I know it might make people uncomfortable, Joshua, that I'm cool with a Sean Hannity or Mark Levin and guys like that. Well, it's personal. It has nothing to do with politics. I've known Sean for over 25 years. I totally disagree with his politics more than half the time. Okay. Same thing with Mark Levin. I just don't hate him for it. They're white. They're conservatives. They GOP. All right. We think differently. We run across people every day that we disagree with politically. And that's just the way it is. But that doesn't mean we can't be cool with one another. It's just that I know where you stand and I stand in a different place. Having said all of that, as a black man that has been voting Democrat all my life, I voted for one Republican my entire life. That was Chris Christie in New Jersey, because I thought Corzine was a crook, okay? So I voted for Chris Christie in New Jersey, in the state of New Jersey as governor. That's the only Republican I've ever voted for in my life. I'm looking at it and I'm saying, and I'll tell you this, and I'll share this with you real quick. I gave a speech years ago in Vanderbilt, along with numerous other places. And I used to say this line before I ever officially got involved with hosting a political show or anything like that, Joshua. And I would say to people, in my perfect world, I wish everybody in the black community spent one election voting Republican. And it had nothing to do with policy. I said, the reason why is because Democrats know they got our votes on lock, so they get to take us for granted. Republicans know they don't have us, so they get to dismiss us. And we're the one group of people in this country that's devoid of representation. And I said, I want to upset the apple cart to make both parties have to legitimately compete for our vote so they can work for it. The reason I bring that up, Joshua, is because that's me to this very day. Anything to upset the apparatus, to make both parties say, we got a chance to get their vote, let's work for it, puts us in a position that I believe the Latino community is in, where you have to diligently work for our vote. which means that you have to come to us with ideas that help benefit us instead of being to our detriment. Am I wrong for feeling that way?
I don't think you're wrong. You there's a lot in there. I want to touch on all of it. I know I'm not going to have time. Sure. I don't think you're wrong for wanting the Democratic Party to do more to earn our vote. And I think that this is a place sometimes where like black folks who kind of we're trying to get to the same destination. We got different routes on how we want to get there. We start hating each other. And I don't think we need to do that, because what I'm hearing you say is that ultimately, more so than anything, you want to provide a safe and effective world for black people. So we're on the same side, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's what I've been saying.
I do think, though, there are enormous, and sometimes I'm even fearful of irreversible ramifications to the black community for any action we have taken or not taken that will allow somebody like President Trump to run through the federal, and this was also true of Nixon, by the way,
sure,
to run through the federal government and weaponize the checks and balances systems.
Absolutely.
The way that they have, that will have effects that I'm not like, when we talk about the Supreme Court, I'm not even sure I will outlive the effect that Donald Trump's thumbprint on the Supreme Court will have.
Okay.
And so in that strategy, and this is the last thing I'll say, you know, you said you're 45% of Americans are independent. That's true. 45% of black people aren't independent. And there is I believe there's a reason why. I'll ask you, do you think that there's a level of privilege in being able to be politically independent as a black American that you are, to have a separation of politics and friendships with somebody like Hannity that you have? Do you think there's like a level of privilege there that the average black American is not enjoying, therefore not also enjoying the type of coverage you might have?
I don't. And here's the reason why. I grew up in Hollis, Queens. My mother was a staunch liberal. My father didn't give a damn. He was about money and economics, and it was about Republican. I saw people in Hollis, Queens, bro, in Hollis, Queens. Now, we'd go to the polls, and here's where it gets tricky, but I'm sure you can relate to this. We'd go to the polls and vote Democrat. But how we lived sometimes was conservative. We damn sure had conservative households. Think about this for a second. Well, you got Gavin Newsom, for example. No throwing no shade on anybody. I'm just using an example. When you talk about transgender and kids having the rights to transition from men to girls and playing in girls' sports, or you come home and your name is Steven, and then you come home a week later and you say, I want to be known as Stephanie. That I didn't know a black household that vibed in. You understand? Hell no. It didn't happen. Now, times have changed, and we understand that, and times evolve, and we get that part too. I'm just talking about how we were. So when people sit up there and they look at who I befriend, like when I'm talking about friendship, I'm talking about cats that are decent with one another, talk with one another, et cetera, et cetera. Whether it's Sean Hannity or anybody else, it ain't like they my boys that I grew up with in Hollis or my boys that went to college. There's differences. You see what I'm saying? I'm talking about a core decency. You get along with one another outside of discussing politics, more so than the intimacy that people would try to attach to politics when that just doesn't happen. But in the end, what it comes down to is this. When you say being careful, I want to address that last point. I'm going to give you the floor. When we talk about being careful, well, if I'm sitting there and encouraging you to favor one side or the other, I get your point. But if I'm pointing out something that's factual and it just so happens to not benefit your side, there are people that look at the chair that I sit in and want me to ignore what is obvious and factually correct just because it doesn't favor their side. Well, then that means you don't want me to do my job. You don't want me to be fair-minded. And what I'm trying to say is I don't get to sit in that seat. I'm not an influencer. I'm a journalist. I'm a commentator. I mean, this is what I've been doing my career. How could I have the guests that I've had on this show to do the things that I've done if I'm flagrantly unfair just because I want to favor another side? There are people that talk about it, and there are people that do it. You do what you do statistically, qualitatively, quantitatively. This is what you bring to the table. What if somebody came up to you, Josh, and said to you, you know what? These numbers factually favor them ahead of the other side that you want to favor. Are you going to go there and let them compromise you doing your job because they don't want you to tell that truth? Or are you going to do what you're supposed to do?
I hear what you're saying. And I think I have two things I want to say, because I want to come back to the politically independent thing in a second. Sure. But, you know, I'll lend you some credence here, Stephen A. I think the right side of the aisle sees you optimistically, and I think the left side of the aisle sees you as a liability. And I think that the right side seeing you optimistically, I think actually demonstrates probably their willingness for them to stretch their tent to the left more than the left is willing to stretch their tent to the right. Because as I said before, the majority of the stuff you say is actually pretty left-leaning. So the fact that they kind of welcome you with open arms, I think is interesting. I think where people are afraid on the left side of the aisle, Black people, is that the people who are welcoming you with open arms feel very violent to them, right? In how they speak and how they talk about legislation and the like. When we go back to the politically independent stuff, I think the vast majority of Black people are not politically independent because, one, the unspeakable levels of legislative and judicial and executive violence practiced by white conservatives in the Republican Party. And two, the way that violence has materialized in their everyday lives, the ramification of the war on drugs, the ramifications of stop and frisk and no-knock warrants and discriminatory loan practices and Jim Crow, the way that that violence materializes in their everyday lives does not even give them the option of assuming that both of these parties could be equally viable for safety, or even equipped to provide safety, or even interested in providing them safety. Mm-hmm. So the reason I think a large share of Black Americans are not politically independent is because it's not because they lack critical thought. And I know you didn't say that, but some people right. have. I think it's because they've done the analysis and the data and the history have pointed them in a direction that harkens back to what I said earlier. Wherever white conservatives have been in American history has been demonstrably dangerous for Black Americans. And currently, the Republican Party is rife with white conservatives who don't sound that different from their forefathers.
Okay.
And I think that your connection with them scares people. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It does make sense. And nobody's ever put it to me that way, but I appreciate the fact that you have, and I don't disagree with you. What I'm saying is we live in a binary system. Here's my pushback, and it's not really pushback because I don't disagree with anything that you said. But in a binary system that we live in, at the polls, we got two choices. So let's take into account Donald Trump. How many times have the left said he used to be with the left? He was a Democrat. We saw Oprah promoting him to be president once mm-hmm. upon a time, along mm-hmm. with various others. Mm-hmm. A matter of fact, he would have ran as a Democrat in 2016, according to many, if it mm-hmm. were not for the presence of Hillary Clinton. Why does that matter? Because on the right, and I brought this up publicly, and you know, I know you know this to be true. The right, they tried to give you Christie, Carla Fiorini, Marco Rubio, you know, Jeb Bush. This time around, it was Ron DeSantis, it was Nikki Haley, it was Vivek Ramaswamy, it was all these. They got to give you John Kasich in 2016. The Republicans said, kiss my ass, damn that. We want him. That's what they said. The Democrats said, it's Hillary's turn in 2016. Biden's turn in 2020. It's Kamala Harris's turn in 2024. So I'm looking at it and I'm saying the people for the right said that's our guy. The party for the left said these are our people. But we walk around wanting representation, looking for people to look out for us, and their message to us appears to be hell with what y'all want. We got this. Just follow our lead. Okay? And I push back on that because I'm like, that ain't your damn job. Your damn job is to accept our choices. What we want, because you're supposed to be representing us. So for me, pointing those things out is not me. You might sit up there and say, they might sit up there and say, they're scared. But they ain't scared that I'm vibing with the right. They're scared that I'm willing to be against them to call the apparatus that they have in place out so people like you and various others could be in a position to step up and show us where the hell this party is supposed to be instead of where they want us to go. That's my point. That's where the resistance comes in. So if people on the liberal side, Joshua, were calling me out because they're saying, nah, we like it just the way it is, that's different. But when you try to misinform folks, not you, of course, them, try to misinform folks acting like I'm down for the right when I'm not a Republican, I'm not a conservative. Economically, fiscally, I might be that way, but in no other way am I, okay? My point is the facts show it. I've stated it. I've voted for it. And countless times, I have stood up on behalf of our community fighting the good fight. I've only lost my career twice fighting for us. Don't get me started on that one. But these people are going to come out of the woodworks trying to act like I'm something I'm not just because I'm not parroting their speech. They keep parroting the liberal speech, which is why they lost the damn election.
You touched on a lot of parts there. At the core of what you have been saying this entire conversation is something that I like. And it is that I think it sounds like you want the actual voters to have more capital, more social yes. capital, more political capital in their party.
Yes.
I think you're also touching on a political elite on the left that is fearful of you for the reason that you said. And they're not so much who I'm talking about, because I think you might be right with that. I think that there is a tranche of Democratic elite actors who do want to uphold the status quo, who do think that the initiatives that would ultimately help Black people and the working class would be too costly, would be too much. And so I don't have a problem with them being a little upset with you. I think the group of people that I'm talking about maybe are not the political elites necessarily. Mm-hmm. And I think it is people who maybe fear that your approach that you've been taking will inspire cynicism because, you know, we're saying like this size, but that's like, sure. And they're like, yeah, this is why we shouldn't be voting in this anyway, right? And that you as a leader, you as somebody who actually people listen to, like significantly, like I said, you got my little brother's ear in a way I don't, on politics.
Right.
Not on basketball, on politics.
Right.
That you're coming in, saying something is, you know, incorrect, right, and then dipping out leaves people more likely to say the system is rigged. There's nothing that we can do. There's a level of futility around it, even though this person I like is talking politics and I should disengage a little bit more. And so one thing I would love to kind of see you do is as you're criticizing, as you're critiquing, as you're kind of taking these big swings, I appreciate that you're taking them. I would also like you to talk about the things that you want to see in this. Who are you supporting? Who are you getting behind? How should people engage with the political system? Because Stephen A., you in it now. Like you still sometimes you talk like, oh, I'm just like, you're in it now. You are as big as any other political actor, and that level of responsibility I think isn't going anywhere.
My brother, I'm telling you right now, they ain't messing with my money. Because according to FCC equal time rules, the minute I announce that I'm running, I will be taken off the air immediately, which means I lose my check. That ain't happening, bro. I ain't apologizing for that to anybody. I'm keeping it a buck with you. Ain't happening. But I say that to say, if it wasn't for that, I would announce to your face, I'm gonna be on that debate stage in 2027. I'm running because I want them. I want them badly. And I'm talking, if I'm supposed to be some righty, how come I never thought about running as a Republican? How come I never thought about running as a conservative? Because it ain't me. It ain't how I roll. See, my whole point is that I would want to run as a Democrat because I'm a traditional on that side. I'm a traditionalist on that side of the fence. I'm not down for woke culture. I'm not down for cancel culture. How do you think those things are going to diametrically affect our community? When you know how I always say this, when white folks catch a cold, Black folks catch pneumonia. It's always worse for us. So if folks are getting canceled, if folks are being compromised, if folks are being muzzled, who you think is going to affect first? It's always us. So my attitude is, nah, I want to get away from that and get back to what made this party successful, what got Obama elected, what got Clinton elected. That's the kind of stuff. What should have got Al Gore elected if it wasn't for some damn hanging chads in Florida. That's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about, me personally, rather than the stuff that we have been seeing. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Some of the stuff that we've been seeing, though, I mean, even right there, you say, you know, I'm not down with cancel culture in like in regards to the left. It's just how we talk about it, Stephen. There has been the Republican Party literally cancels cultures, canceling the Hispanic culture by way of citizenship, canceling Muslim cultures by travel bans. It's tried to cancel black culture by every facet of American life. And for us to even allow that perspective of cancel culture to be something that's only on the left is like you're assuming a premise that is faulty, right? And so, like, I think that this happens sometimes when folks are speaking is they don't realize where they're starting from is a ground level that is completely flawed. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. You know what? Not only does it make sense, it's never been broken down to me like that. When you brought about the Hispanic culture, the Muslim culture, the whole bit in terms of being a form of cancel culture exercised by those on the other side. That's very, I never thought about it like that. I never did. I got to look at that, Josh. I got to look at that. I'm sure. I got to look at that. I don't mind. I told you I don't mind being corrected. That's the whole point. I'm here to be corrected. There's no problem whatsoever, man. Listen, I got to get ready to go, but I wanted to ask you one more question. And this is along the line of sports, because we're going to have this conversation again. And by the way, in the future, I plan on having, you know, panel discussions, Democrats, Republicans, everybody in between, bringing folks together and having this conversation and playing the role of moderator as opposed to me being in front of the microphone and camera by myself. It don't bother me at all. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm definitely going to want you to be a part of it in the future because you're the real deal and I appreciate you. My last question to you would be this. Another interesting topic. The NBA, you put out a post, I forgot when it was, about the NBA being a socialist league, the National Basketball Association. The floor is yours, my brother. Explain that one. I got to hear this. I got to hear it.
I mean, the way that the NBA does their profit sharing is certainly not a capitalist approach, right? So you correct me if I'm wrong, because this is your expertise, you know, every NBA team is putting money in a pot, right? And that money is getting redistributed to making sure that the franchises that are in, you know, low market cities and such still have a certain level of brand prominence that represents the NBA. That's a socialist ideology right there, right? Like, and when I'm saying this, I think sometimes we conflate this word socialist with wanting a handout and not working hard for anything. But I think that form of socialism in some forms that, you know, you'll hear other people talk about is just making sure that the profitability is being distributed equitably. This is the reason why Dr. King was a socialist. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. So I think that's accurate in terms of it being distributed equally. I think the only part that's missing is that when you talk about socialism, you're talking about it from a societal perspective where that imposition is placed on the people. In this case, the people would be the players, but the players have representation and it's collectively bargained. So if you go to the table at the negotiating table and I go to the table and we literally negotiate these stipulations and these conditions under this umbrella where we're at 50% basketball related income, not all income. Not gross income. See, that was the big deal with the WNBA. They're getting a piece of the gross income. The NBA players have dollars that are coming in, but dollars are allocated for things falling under the umbrella of the basketball-related income category. And of the basketball-related income category, which, by the way, is equating to billions a year, they're splitting that 50-50. So I'm saying you did collectively bargain for that. So even though the word socialism loosely applies, you did have representation with lawyers and what have you that went to the table that had the power to negotiate on your behalf, and you negotiated that as a players' union. The one thing I would also add is this, though, and this is very interesting to bring up. When I think about it from that standpoint, here's where it hurts and where it's going to this buffers your point, and it's going to hurt. Basketball-related income was at 57% in favor of the players until around 2011, so 2012, when they had the collective bargaining agreement. Commissioner David Stern, before he retired, was determined to get that brought down from 57% to 50%.
Sounds like Stern.
That 7% equates to billions a year.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying? So it costs the players. And I think that that is when we talk about loose socialism to some degree, my words, not yours, that's where it emanates from. But it's based on, my only pushback would be, it was collectively bargained. You didn't have to agree to it. You know what I'm saying? You did. And that's what it was.
No, and I agree with that pushback. I think the framing that I put it in, I think there are ways we interpret the word socialism, I think, that are not connected to its actual definition.
Mm-hmm.
Collective bargaining is on the left side of the political aisle. I'll definitely say that much. We can see the right to work states that were mostly pushed by Republicans and the like. And this is, not to, go into a whole different topic, but this is one of the things I say about capitalism and corporatism. I think that there are aspects of capitalism that can be beautiful if they can be contained.
Gotcha.
Right? It is unfettered capitalism. It's capitalism without rules, without things like collective bargaining, right? That create these conditions that then push people to be more open to socialist ideas.
You just highlighted why I don't consider myself a conservative. Because to me, when you talk about free market capitalism, states' rights and stuff like that, right? What you're essentially saying to Black people is trust the system. You'll be fine. And we ain't trying to trust no damn system without some oversight. We always want some level of oversight. We also want some level of regulation, because to have otherwise is to trust yourself to be at the mercy of an establishment that has a history of marginalizing folks, which I will never comply with, which is why I religiously push back when people try to say what I am when I know I'm not that right leaning, because I know better than that. And I've told Republicans this to their face, but it ain't my fault that CNN, MS Now, and other places don't quote me on that. And they'll let Fox pick out whatever quotes they want to pick out to buffer their points that they think support them and ignore the other stuff that I say. All I could do is continue doing what I'm doing, just like you're continuing to do what you're doing. Joshua, I got to bounce. I appreciate it, man. Listen, I'm going to make sure my producers give you my number, because I like to be corrected. Josh, it doesn't bother me. You know what I'm saying? You can just text me and just correct your brother if I mess up, my man. It's all right. I ain't going to be offended by it. I appreciate it, man.
T.O.G., I appreciate you.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, my man. All the best to you, man. Keep doing big things, man. And you know you're welcome back anytime. You know that.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on.
All right, my brother. You take it easy. The one and only Joshua Doss right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Data scientist and a political researcher. NAACP Image Award nominee. For his viral social media posts and a bunch of other stuff. Doss Discourse. That's the name of it. Stephen A. Smith in the house. You heard what he had to say. You heard my conversations. I don't need to elaborate any further than that. The brother is who he is. Special dude. Opposite of Anton Daniels in certain respects. But intelligent brothers that have their perspective, that know they are invited on Straight Shooter to engage in discourse in a very respectful manner. Who would have thunk it? I always do. So do guys like that. Thank you for this edition of Straight Shooter with yours truly. Remember to catch me Wednesday night, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio, channel 124. Until then, everybody, peace and love.